Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Soito Daf Lamed Vov. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins from the top line of Daf Lamed Vov. Before we begin the Gemara, we glance at the side where we have a nosei, a topic heading, which reads Nisim Bekriyas Hayarden, the miracles that took place when the Jordan River split for the purpose of the crossing of the Jewish people in the time of Yeshua, v'avora so'avonim mimokom lemokom, and the transportation of the stones that we've made reference to quite a few times in our previous shiurim from one place to another. As we just alluded to, we are continuing with a topic that we've been discussing in our last few shiurim, and we start from the top. Bo urei kamo nisim nasu ba'oisayom. Come and see how many miracles took place that day, the day that the Jewish people crossed the Jordan under the leadership of Yehoshua. Ovru Yisrael eseyardein. They crossed the Jordan, which, of course, as we saw in our previous shiurim, the water had stopped flowing, creating a dry river bed for them to cross. Ubo'u lahar grizim ulahar evil yeser mishishim mil, and they traveled in one day from the point of crossing to the location of Har Grizim and Har Evil, which is more than 60 mil, approximately 60 kilometers, quite a tremendous distance to travel by foot, an entire nation of people, men, women, children, young and old. V'ein kol brio yecholo lamud b'fneihem, and no creature, no nation, no people were able to stand up against them. V'cholo oimed b'fneihem miad nitras. Any nation that felt threatened by the Jewish people and tried to oppose, they immediately nitras. They immediately became diuretic. Shenemar es emosi ashalach lifonecha. Emosi is my fear. I will send ahead of you. V'hamoisi es kol ha'om asher tovo bohem, and I will confound any nation that comes upon you. The pasuk says regarding the this pasuk, it comes from Parshas Beshalach in Tipol aleihem emosa v'fachad. The fear and trembling will fall upon any nation that tries to stop the Jews. Before we go ahead, first let's take note of the Rashi on the third line from the top. After the Gemara made reference to anyone, any nation that would try to oppose them, they would immediately lose control of their bowels, they become diuretic. The Gemara quoted a pasuk, "V'hamoisi es kol ha'am." Rashi says, "Loshen mehuma v'irbuv haguf." It's an expression indicating a bodily confounding, and irbuv haguf, where the body is literally mixed up, umashe besochon, that which is within the body, and as we said, loss of digestive control. Now, in our Gemara, we read the pasuk Tipoil aleihem emosa v'fachad, an indication that the Almighty was going to cast cast fear upon all those that would come and oppose the Jewish people during their exodus from Mitzrayim and entrance to the land of Israel. If you notice, we have a bracketed section. If we skip that momentarily, the acharkach heviu es havonim uvonu es hamizbeach, the storyline continues after the brackets, indicating what they did on that day that they crossed the Yarden and reached Har Grizim and Har Eval. And as we just read, they and in their trip to Har Grizma Evel, they brought with them stones, and they built a Mizbeach there, and we'll continue with that shortly. But let's go over the bracketed section. Once having quoted this pasuk, Tipol Alehem Emosav Afachad, a pasuk from the Oz Yoshir from the Shiras Hayam, we continue with that pasuk, Ad Yavor Amcho Hashem. We're reading in the bracketed section. That's a continuation of the pasuk, Zu Bi'o Rishona. That's a reference to the first entrance into the land in the time of Yehoshua. Ad Yavor Amzu Konisa. Notice the term Yavor. Again, it's a second coming, if you will, a second entrance into the land. Zu Bi'o Shnia. That's a reference to the future return to the land of Israel in the time of Ezra and Nehemiah, after the Babylonian exile. So the pasuk indicates two entrances to the land, one in the time of Yehoshua, and the second hundreds of years later, after the Babylonian exile, which of course followed the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash, there was a second entrance to land, Emor Me'ata, and from this pasuk, and the fact that these two entrances to the land were compared to one another, we can conclude Re'uyin Hoyu Yisrael Las Le'osois Lahem Neis Beviyoshnia Kabiyo Rishona, that the Jewish people at the planning stage, according to the original blueprints, they were deserving a miracle of equal proportions in their second return as was in the time of Yehoshua. Now, in the time of Yehoshua, we just have been studying the great miracles that took place with regard to the return of the Jewish people after the Babylonian exile. It was done in a much more humble fashion. Why was that? If the pasuk indicates, according to the original blueprints, that their eventual second return, their second entrance to land, would be equal to the first, why historically was it in fact not so? Ela shegoram hachet. The reason for it is that the Jewish people at the time of the Babylonian exile, that period of time, they were engaged in quite a bit of sinning. There was a great amount of intermarriage. If you study the book of Ezra, you'll see it quite clearly in the verses. And because of all the sins that they were involved with, they did not merit having the same type of return, miraculous return, but rather it was done through intervention of the Gentile authorities of the time, the Persian monarch who granted them permission to go back, and in fact a rather small contingent of Jews in fact did return. So it wasn't with the same glory as the first entrance to the land, but as we said, that's because of the chet, the sin. Now we go back to what was happening on that day of crossing into Eretz Yisrael, Eretz Canaan, in the time of Yehoshua. We mentioned that they traveled a great distance. The Almighty provided, security for them through the form of fear cast upon anyone who would try to interfere with the Jewish people, and anyone who would in fact interfere would be confounded. V'acharkach, we're continuing in the Gemara, V'acharkach heviu es ho'avonim, and then they brought the stones. These are the stones that they were instructed to take with them at the point of the crossing, and they brought with them the stones, uvonu es ha'mizbeach, and they built the altar that they were previously instructed to do when they would come to the Har Grizim and Har Eval, v'saduhu besid, and they covered it with the seed lime coating, v'kosvu aleihem es kol divrei ha'Torah b'shivim loshon, and they wrote on the stones the entire Torah in 70 languages. Shenemar ba'er heitev. In the Chumash, it says that these stones would have written on them the Torah ba'er heitev, well explained. Well explained, of course, is a reference to the 70 languages. And as we learned in our previous shiur, this was in order for the nations of the world at that time to learn what the Torah expects of humanity. What else happened? Ve'helu olos u'shlomim. They offered olos sacrifices, burnt offerings, and shlomim sacrifices, peace offerings. Ve'ochlu v'shasu v'samchu. They ate, they drank, they were joyful. U'borchu v'kilulu. The whole blessing and curse ceremony took place, as we've explained in the past. V'kiplu es ho'avonim uvo v'lonu b'gilgal. Then took with them the stones, those very stones, and carried them to Gilgal, where they lonu, as they slept, they spent the night, their first night in Eretz Canaan, in Gilgal. Shinemar vavartem oisom imochem vinachtem oisom bamolon. The Pasuk tells us about the carriage of those stones from Har Grizim to Gilgal, Molon, where they would encamp. Yochol b'chol molon u'molon. Is there an expectation that they would continue carrying these stones to every place of encampment? Talmud Lomar, Asher Tolinu Boi Halayla. The Pasuk indicates that night, where the stones are to be carried to, where you will encamp that night. Uksiv, Veshteim Esrei, Wavonim Ho'ela, Asher Lokhu. And the Pasuk makes reference to those stones, that they would be taken to that one place, that first place of encampment in Gilgal. Tana. This section of the Torah deals with something called the Tzira. You'll find Tzira translated often in English translations as the wasp. I wouldn't commit myself to a literal translation. Maybe yes, maybe no, but whatever it is, it's some type of entity, a creature that was venomous and could be used as, let's say, a weapon against enemies. So the source quoted by the Gemara said, Tzira lo avro imohem. I should mention that we're going to see in 1 second that the Almighty tells Moshe Rabbeinu that when the Jews enter the land of Israel, there is a Tzira that will be sent. This source says, Tzira lo avrimon, the Tzira did not cross the Jordan with the Jewish people. The Gemara asks, V'lo, is that really so? V'hoksi v'shalachti es ha-tzira lefanecha, I will send the Tzira ahead of you. Omar Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish, al-sfas ha-ya'ardein omda. Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish is the first approach. You see, we've numbered him one. Later, we'll see Rav Papa number two. Rav Shimon ben Lakish says that it remained on the Jordan River banks, v'zorka b'hen mora, and it cast its mora, its bitterness, its venom, v'simsa einehem milamalo, v'sir sason milamata. And this is a reference to the in local inhabitants of Eretz Canaan that would pose a military threat. So this entity, this Tzira, shot its venom and it blinded their eyes from above and castrated or sterilized them from below. Shenemar v'anochi hishmaditi es ha'amori mipneihem asher kegoiva arozim gavhoi v'chosoin hu ko'aloinim. The Pasuk in Amos reveals historically what happened. Says that the Almighty says, I destroyed the Amorites from in front of you, whose height was like the height of Erez trees, very tall trees, and strong like Alonim, another type of tree. V'ashmid pirio mimal v'shoroshov mitachas. This is the reason this pasuk is quoted, to indicate I destroyed its fruits from above. That's a reference to the eyes, and its roots from below, a reference to sterilization. Rav Papa reacting to the Tanaic source saying Tzira didn't go, and the Pasuk says Tzira did go. Shtei Tziros Havoi. There were two Tzirois. Chada de Moshe v'chada de Yeshua. One was a Tzira that was granted to Moshe Rabbeinu, and the other was one that was given to Yehoshua. De Moshe lo Ovar, de Yeshua Ovar. The one that was given to Moshe did not cross over. The one given to Yeshua did. The Gemara continues now with a lengthy discussion concerning the division of the 12 tribes at Har Grizim and Har Eval. Shisha Shvatim Olu L'Rosh Har Grizim. We have seen already that six tribes went up to Har Grizim. This, of course, we saw in the Mishnah back on the Aflamid Beis. The Gemara asks a question regarding the Pasuk in Sefer Yoshua, Perek Ches, Pasuk Lamed Gimel. The Gemara asks, "My vehachetzyoi." In order to appreciate this a little bit more, it's worth reading the Pasuk together. So we're looking at the Pasuk in Yehoshua, Perek Ches, Pasuk Lamed Gimel. It says there, regarding, of course, the Har Grizim and Har Eval, V'chol Yisrael zekeinu v'shoytrim v'shoyftov oimdim mizel mizel lo'oro neged ha-koyenim ha-levim noise aron bris Hashem kager ko'ezrach, and all of the Jewish people, the leaders, the different judicial officials were standing on this side and that side of the Oron, and Chetzio el mul Har Grizim, the Hachetzio el mul Har Eval, half opposite or facing Har Grizim, and the half, the Hachetzio, and that's the key word for our discussion, and the other half, el mul Har Eval. Kasher tzivo Moshe Eved Hashem levorach es Om Yisrael Borishona, as in accordance with the command that Moshe Rabbeinu received from the Almighty. The Pasuk, as we said, indicated half were El Mul Har Grizim. It could have said V'chetzio El Mul Har Eval. The Pasuk, though, adds a Hey. The Hey is often referred to as the Hey Hayadia, the specifying Hey, the informative Hey. What is the reason for that? Omar Rav Kahana, Kederech Shechalukin Kan Kach Chalukin Be'avnei Efod. As they were divided in Har Grizim and Har Eval, thusly the names of the tribes appeared on the high priest's Avnei Eifo. These are stones that the Kohen Gadol wore on both of his shoulders. On either shoulder there was a stone, and on these stones were the names of the 12 tribes, divided 6 and 6. Before we go further, let's look at the Rashi, the upper part of the Rashi commentary, the upper half. My v'hachetzio b'Yoshua, hochi k'siv b'haikro d'masnisin, v'chol Yisrael v'chulei, chetzio el mul ha-grizim, v'hachetzio el mul ha-reval, as we read before. Lomali l'michta v'hachetzio. What's the significance of that word? D'mashma'o chetzio ha-miuchad. It indicates a special half. Or it's a reference to a half that was mentioned somewhere else. And the Gemara Rav Kana told us, yes, it's a reference to the other half that was mentioned somewhere else, namely in the context of the Avnei Efo, those stones of the high priest, of the Kohen Gadol. We continue in the Rashi, Kederech shechalukin ha-shvotim ba-grizim ba-reval, kidechtiv, the Pasuk says in Dvorim, and we've noted on the side, Dvorim, Perichov Zayin, Psukim Yudbeis, and Yudgimel, and Eile Yamdu Levorech Esa'om v'chule, Ve'ele Yamdu Al-Klola, and as far as the division is concerned, we've included on the side of the Gemara, indicating Rav Kahana, and under Grizim, you see the tribes Shimon, Levi, Yudah, Yisachar, Yosef, and Binyamin. And with regard to Eval, you can see there was Reuven, Gad, Asher, Zvulun, Dan, and Naphtali. Kach halukin ba'avnei Efod, she'amur behen shisha mishmoisam. The pasuk by the Avnei Efod in Sefer Shmos, which describes the names and on the stones of the Kohen Gadol, Hanoch Shisha Dahar Grizim, Ksuvim Alo Achas, Veshisha Dahar Eval, Ksuvim Al Hashenis. The six that were associated, the six tribes associated with Har Grizim are on one stone, and six tribes that are associated with Har Eval were etched on the other stone. V'hainu dichtiv v'hachetzio. Oysu chetzio hachokuk ba'achas min ho'avonim. The half, and here you notice that's why the hay appears. The half, of tribes that were etched on the other stone, the second stone. We've then presented the pasuk. We raised the question: what does v'hachetzio mean? And Rav Kahana answered and his answer was the division of Har Gerizim and Har Eval paralleled the previously alluded to division on the two stones. Notice on the side of the more we have a Nosei topic heading, and we indicate a general note that in Yonei Har Gerizim ve'Eval Muskorim Ad Lamed Zayin Beis, from time to time the Gemara will be making reference to Har Gerizim and Har Eval all the way till Lamed Zayin Beis, certainly beyond the limits of today's Shiur. The topic heading that continues this sugya is under the Nosei we've written Deos Beseder Hashemos Shal Avnei Ha'Ephod. Opinions with regard to the order of the names that were on the Avnei Ephod of the Kohen Godol. So we've already seen one opinion. Rav Kahana told us that if you want to know how the stones of the Kohen Godol were divided in terms of names, just look at how the tribes were divided with regard to Har Gerizim and Har Eval. As the Torah spells out in Dvarim Perichov Zion, Psukim Yudbeis and Yudgimel with regard to Gerizim and Eval. So, as far as our sugi is concerned, the unknown is Avnei Ephod. How did the names appear? So Rav Kahana gave us his approach. Now, when you continue in the Gemara, you notice Meisvei, that indicates a question. And we have a long question. Notice how long this question goes down, quite a few lines down, Omid Beis, one long Tanaic source. In this Tanaic source, there are two opinions as to how the names appeared on the Avnei Ephod. Neither Tanaic opinion, though, matches what Rav Kahana, who is an Amoro, he's a later scholar, what he said. So, that being the case, Rav Kahana is in trouble. He doesn't have a basis for his approach to the Avnei Ephod. And at the end of the long question marking, you'll note, then, it says, Tiufta, the Rav Kahana Tiufta. This is from the end of, on Amud Beis. If you knock out that explanation, why did Rav Kahana come into the picture? Did he not come into the picture in order to explain what did v'hachetzio mean? But if his explanation is rejected, then the question comes back. And that's what you'll see there on Omid Beis, right after the rejection of Rav Kahana, v'elamai v'hachetzio. And we'll, Mirtz Hashem, get to that when we read till that point. Now that you have a pretty good idea of what to expect, we continue in the Gemara text. Meisvei, and you'll notice the starred note says, "Bebraisa yesh od shtei shitos al shemos shehoyu ba'avnei ephod v'heim lo k'Rav Kahana." Neither opinion will match Rav Kahana, and so the focus right now is on the stones worn by the Kohen Gadol. Shtei avonim toivos hoyu lo l'Kohen Gadol al k'seifov. Two precious stones were on the Kohen Gadol's k'seifov, shoulders. Achas mikan v'achas mikan. One on one shoulder, the other on the other shoulder. V'shemos shneimosor shvotim kosuv aleim. And the names of the 12 tribes appeared on the stones. Shishra levin zu, v'shishra levin zu. Six on one stone, six on the other stone. Shneimar. The posuk says regarding the stones. In Shmos perik chavches posuk yud. Shisha mishmoisam al hoeven o'achas. And above, you notice in our Mark of Morris, we've written in the S Shemos Shisho Hanoisorim Al Hoeven Hashenis Ketol Doisam. Let's translate the Pasuk. Six of the names were on one stone, and six of the remaining names were on the second stone in order of their birth. And the Tana infers as follows. Shnia ketoldosam. On the second stone the names appeared in the order of their birth. V'loi rishoina ketoldasam. But on the first stone, the names appeared, but not in the order of their birth. Mipnei Shehuda mukdam. Because Yehuda was placed first. Now, on the side of the Gemara, simply taken from Rashi, but we've included in a list form to make things easier to see, the Tanakama of the Brisa, we're looking at a list that you see in the margin. The Tanakana of the Brisa said that the second stone, that's what we have listed as number two, are the names of the tribes as they appeared in order of their birth. Of course, if you open up the Chumash and Sefer Bereishis, you can see where the tribes were born. But to make things shorter and more direct, we have a list here. So stone number two, the list is God Asher Yisachar Zvulun Yosef Binyamin. List one, that is stone one, as we saw in the source, said here the names appear not in order of their birth, but for only one actually is out of order, and that's Yehuda. He appears as number one. He wasn't the firstborn. Everyone, I'm sure, knows that Reuven was the firstborn. But after Yehuda, the names appear in the order of their birth as well, and you can see Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Don, Naphtali. The first four were Leah's children, and Rachel then had given her bondmaid to Yaakov, and so Don and Naphtali were born, and then Zilpah had two children, the bondmaid of Leah, God and Asher, and then Leah continued having two more sons, Yisachar and Zvulun, and finally Rachel had Yosef and Binyamin. You'll notice that we've divided this into two lists, one and two. You can easily compare that to what Rav Kahana had. Just look at his division of Grizim and Aval. Well, neither one resembles what neither one of Rav Kahana's stones, which correspond to Grizim and Aval, look like the Tanakama. Let's continue in our Gemara. V'chamishim oiseis hoyu esrim v'chamesh al evin zu v'esrim v'chamesh al evin zu. There were a total of 50 letters that comprise the 12 names, and you would have 25 on one stone and 25 on the other stone. We don't recommend counting the letters that appear in what we have written on the side. You'll see why later when we get into the Gemara. But for our purposes, 50 letters comprise the 12 names, 25 on one stone, 25 on the other. Rabbi Hanino ben Gamliel Omer. Now we continue at the top of Omid Beis. He has his approach to the stones. Lo kederech shechalukin b'chumash hapekudim, chalukin b'avnei eifod, ela kederech shechalukin b'chumash sheni. Not in the way the names appear in Chumash HaPikudim, that's a reference to Sefer Bamidbar. There's a listing of the Shvatim in Sefer Bamidbar. Rashi makes reference to that in on the first line of the Rashi, but and we've included on the side that list, but it's not really important for us. It's in that list appear the names appear in a given order in Bamidbar Perek Aleph Pasuk Hey, and we've written the list. However, what is important for us? Rabbi Hanina ben Gamliel's list of names as far as the stones as taken from Chumash Sheni from Sefer Shmos. And the Baraisa goes on. Ketzad, how is that? How do they appear in Sefer Shmos? B'nei Leah Kesidron, B'nei Rochel, Echod Mikan V'Echod Mikan, U'B'nei Shvachos Be'emza. Now, B'nei Leah Kesidron means the sons of Leah in the order of their birth. How many sons did Leah have? She had six sons. So on one stone, notice we have this also on the side of our Gemara, a list, we call it Rab Hanino ben Gamliel. And we call this Seder Chumash Sheni, the order of Chumash Sheni, the second book. That's Shmos. Shmos is the second book of the five books of Moses. So in Chumash Sheni, list one are Leah's sons, and they are Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, Yisachar, Zvulun. List number two has at the beginning and the end the two sons of Rachel. So you can see Yosef is the first on stone number two, and the last name is Binyamin. And in the middle, you have the sons of the Shvachos. The sons of the Shvachos were Don, Naphtali, God, Asher. Four sons, two from each Shifa, two from Bilhah, and two from Zilpah. The Gemara asks, well, according to this breakdown, this is not in order of their birth. So how does Rabbi Hanina ben Gamliel explain Velamai ani mekayem ketoldosam? What will Rabbi Hanina ben Gamliel do with the pasuk which said ketoldosam, which the Tanakhama said in terms of these, the second stone had the names in order of their birth? So what does that mean? You'll notice, by the way, that we have a little star indicating to look back at Omid Aleph. It's on that line on Omid Aleph that you have Kitoldosam referred to by the Tanakhama. So what does Rabbi Hanina ben Gamliel do with this word indicating order of birth when he in his list doesn't have anything of the sort? The Gemara answers, you want to know what Kitoldosam means? Kishmoisim shikoro lehem aviyam velo kishmois Kishemos Shikolim Moshe. Ketoldosam means in accordance with the names that they were given at their birth by their father, by Yaakov Avinu, and not the names of the tribes as referred to by Moshe. Reuven, velo Reuveni, means Yaakov referred to his first son calling him Reuven, and Moshe referred to the tribe as Reuveni. So what was on the stone was Reuven, as you see, without a yud at the end. Shimon velo Shimoini, Don velo ha Doni, God velo ha Godi. Here you can see we've read the Tanakh source. Two opinions regarding how the names appeared in terms of what order did they appear on the stones of the Kohen Gadol. We've seen two lists. Neither of the lists matches Rav Kahana. Tiufta, the Rav Kahana, Tiufta. So that this source indicates that Rav Kahana is refuted. He doesn't have a Tanaic basis for his opinion. But as we said before, this brings us back to the original question. Rav Kahana simply was brought in as an answer to what does V'hachetzio mean. If the Hachetzio, the second half by the Har Grizim and Ayeval, is not a reference to the Kohen Gadol stones. So the Gemara asks, Ma Ela V'Ela Mai V'Hachetzio? What is the reference to the second half of tribes in Har Grizim and Har Ayeval? Tana, the Gemara answers, Chetzio Shomul Har Grizim Miruba Mechetzio Shel Har Eval, the half of the tribes that were on Har Grizim, population-wise, was greater. Merubo means greater in number than the half that was on Har Eval. And why is that? Mipnei She Levi Lamata. We're going to say something now that's not going to make any sense, but we have to say it anyway, so we'll then appreciate the Gemara's question. Why was the half on Har Grizim greater than the half that were on Har Eval in terms of numbers? Because Levi, who was on Har Grizim, part of them were actually not on Har Grizim. They were down below. Before we go further, we glance at the Rashi. Meruba Mechetzio. Vahainu dekomar, we're looking at Rashi a few lines up from here. Vahainu dekomar vehachetzio mul harevol hachetzio mimuot shebechetzio, the lesser half. So that would explain vehachetzio. There was half on Har Grizim, and the lesser half was on Har Eval. I guess you have to say half How can you have half and something being less than half? Well, half in terms of numbers of tribes, and the lesser half in terms of population of those tribes. So the lesser half of the number of tribes was on Har Eval. And why? Well, and here's the thing that we said that really doesn't make any sense. And the why were they less? Well, because Levi, who was accounted for as being on Har Gerizim, part of that tribe, part of the Har Gerizim tribe of Levi, was actually not on the mountain. Well, the Gemara says, Adirabba, with that explanation, Mipnesha Levi Lamata Batsrilu, because part of a tribe that's ascribed to be on Har Gerizim, part of that tribe wasn't there. They were rather down in the... Lamata means below. They're in the middle between the two mountains. That actually diminishes the population, the number of people from Har Gerizim. So how can you say that the number of people on Har Eval was less because the number of people on Har Gerizim was diminished? That doesn't make sense. Hochi Ka'omar. So we explain as follows. Af al pi shelevi lamato, even though Levi was below, b'nei Yosef imohim, the b'nei Yosef were on Har Gerizim. If you, the Gemara will very shortly point out that the Yosef was a very populous tribe. Yosef was actually comprised of Ephraim and Menashe. So that even though part of Levi, who was assigned to Har Gerizim, was actually diminished because of part of their presence, in fact, not on Har Gerizim, but rather down below, between the two mountains, that was more than compensated for by the fact that B'nai Yosef were on Har Gerizim. And you'll notice we've included a long bracketed section. The reason for these brackets is not for skipping purposes. We have a note on the side, a starred note. It reads, Sograyim Einom L'Shem Dilug. These brackets are not for skipping. Elo L'Harois, simply to show the Adkan Ikur HaTshuva. We've stated the main answer, the main explanation of the Hachetzio, meaning the lesser half was on Har Eval, and we explained that even though part of the people of Har Gerizim were not actually on Har Gerizim, but because Shevet Yosef was with them, that more than compensated, and Har Gerizim population was greater, making the Har Eval number of people the lesser half. So that's the main answer. B'soicham, within the brackets, Muvo, and hora. There are two points that are featured in the bracketed section. One is to show through verses that B'nai Yosef, that the tribe of Yosef was in fact very large, populous-wise. And another point that will follow in the discussion is that the ayin hora, sometimes translated as the evil eye, the eye of jealousy, the eye of miserliness, the evil eye, has no ruling, has no control, has no power over the B'nai Yosef. It's very tempting to elaborate on this topic of the evil eye, but it would get us too far flung and too much off the topic. But nevertheless, the Shas makes reference to the Ayin Hara in numerous places, and here is one of them. We continue now in the Gemara text. After saying that B'nai Yosef served as an overcompensation for the loss of the Levi people because of their great numbers. Shenemar, the pasuk says, "Vayedabru B'nai Yosef es Yehoshua lemor." The people of the tribe of Yosef addressed Yehoshua at the time of the division of the land of Israel. Madua nasatalonu nachlo. Goyrol echod v'chevel echod v'ani amrav. Why have you given us a portion of the land which is more or less equal to any one other portion given to any other tribe? We are very populous, and because of that, we should have a greater land assignment than others. Vayomer aleihem Yehoshua im am rav ata. Well, if you're such a populous people, that would arouse jealousy. Oh, look how many they have. Alei l'cho hayara, you ought to go into forests, hide. Don't allow yourselves to be so visible. And here the Gemara explained that was of course a pasuk quote. And now the explanation. Omar lahen, Yehoshua says to the Bnei Yosef, who are arguing for their claim of greater land assignment because of their large population. Well, lechuvech bo atzmechem biorim shelo tishlot bochem ayin hora. You ought to go hide in forests so that the evil eye doesn't have any ruling over you, doesn't control, doesn't impact upon you. Omar lohen, amrule. So the Bnei Yosef said, no, we don't need to do that. Zare di Yosef lo shalta be'ayna bisha. The seed of Joseph, the descendants from Yosef, are not affected by the ayin. Eino bisha is Aramaic for ayin, bisha's ra, the ayin hara. Dichtiv, ben poras Yosef, ben poras ale oyen. The Omar Rabbi Avo, altehe kore ale oyen. Don't read the pasuk as ale oyen, elo ule ayin. And Rashi explains, ule ayin means that they ascend above the eye, and the eye does not ascend above them. In other words, the evil eye does not rule over them. They rule over the eye, so to speak. So that's one approach from Psukim that shows that the Bnei Yosef are not affected by the Ayin Hora. A second approach, Rabbi Yossi Bar Hanina, he quotes from Psukim in Sefer Bereishis, Perek Memches. Before we continue reading, just note that in Pasuk Tesvav of Perek Memches, it says, Vayavorech es Yosef, and Rabbi Yossi Bar Hanina says from Pasuk Tesayin that follows, it says, regarding the bracha given to Yosef, Vidgu Leroiv Bekerev Haaretz. This is, you might be familiar with the pasuk that you find in Sidurim. People have made it into popular songs. Hamalach Hagoyel Oisi v'chule, and it says v'yidgu l'roiv bekerav aretz. And the word v'yidgu has as its root the word dag. Dag is a fish. Fish, as you know, multiply in great numbers. Ma dogim shebiyam mayim mechasim aleim ve'ein ha'ayin sholetus mayim. Just like the fish in the sea are covered by the waters. When you look at the sea, you cannot discern how many fish are beneath the water's surface. So the eye has no control over them, doesn't rule over them. Af zaro, so Yosef, eino ayin sholetus bam. So too, the seed of Yosef are compared to the fish, and the eye has no control over them. And at this point, we have an arrow you can see to the side of the Gemara. And we refer back to that which was mentioned on Omid Aleph regarding the number of letters divided between the two stones. The sum total was 50 letters. So the Gemara asks, Hani Chamishim Oisios, is that really so? Chamishim Nechi Chado Hafin. If you count up the letters that make up the names of the 12 tribes, you'll find only 49. Chamish, what the Gemara says, Chamishim is 50. Nechi Chado means less one. 49. Omar Rabbi Yitzchak. So Rabbi Yitzchak is the first of two approaches. Yosef hoisifu loy ois achas. Yosef had one letter added to his name. Shenemar edus biyahoisef somoy butseisoy al eretz Mitzrayim. So you see the hay is added, and if you would have counted 49. Now, with the hay addition, that accounts for 50. The Gemara asks, but maskif lo Rav Nachman bar Yitzchok ketoldosom bo'inon. We have a reference to that word from what we saw on Omid Aleph, the word ketoldosom, meaning as they were when they were born. And we indicated that according to Rabbi Hanina ben Gamliel's approach, that meant the way that Yaakov called his sons and not the way they were called later on. And Yosef was called Yosef without a hey. So you can't use this explanation. As far as what appeared on the stones was the way Yosef, the way Yaakov called his sons. Ella, so we come up with answer number two. How do you account for the 50? Ella, kol ha-Torah kula binyamin ksiv. In the rest of the Torah, when you find Binyamin's name, you'll find it with only one yud in it. V'hacha binyamin sholem. Here, with regard to the stones, which reflect the way Yaakov called his names, the word Binyamin appears with two yuds in it. There you've got the extra letter. Kidichtiv aviv kara lo Binyamin. And since that's the way Yaakov referred to him, it's true, in our question we asked, are there not only 49 letters? That's because we were counting the letters the way the names appear most of the time. With regard to Binyamin, we find that Yaakov called him Binyamin with two yuds. That doesn't change the pronunciation of the name, but as far as letter counting is concerned, we gain one more letter, an extra yud. Before we continue, we glance at the side where we have a Nosei/Mivneh heading, topic heading with a structural note. You'll notice we have Roman numerals 1 and 2, and in addition, a diamond will appear. This sugya deals with Yosef and Yehuda, Kidshu Shem Shemayim. Both Yosef, the original Yosef, the son of Yaakov Avinu, and Yehuda, they sanctified God's name. And this achievement on their part, Zehi Shpia Al Shmoisam, this had an effect on their names. The Gemara. Maybe before even we read the Gemara, just structurally take note of the story regarding Yosef appears very shortly. You see the first diamond. The second line from the bottom, Yehuda, my he, there is where the Gemara deals with Yehuda and the sanctification of God's name that the Gemara is referring to. So now our Gemara. Omar Rav Chona Bar Bizna, Omar Rav Shimon Chasida. Yosef Shekidei Shem Shamayim Beseser Hosifu Olav Ois Achas Mishmoy Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Yosef, who accomplished sanctification of God's name, but in a private setting, he merited having one letter added to his name, Ois Achas, one letter from the name of the Almighty. The name of the Almighty, Often referred to as the four-letter name, Yud, and a Hey, and two more letters. But the Hey figures prominently when referring to the name of the Almighty, and hence that was the letter that was added to Yosef's name. We saw this referred to just above when we cited the Pasuk, and we'll say the answer number one is to the number of letters on these stones. So we cited the Pasuk, Eidus b'yahoysef somoi betzeisal eretz Mitzrayim. We saw the hey added to his name. We continue in the Gemara, Yehuda shekide shem shamayim befarhesya nikro kulo al shmoi shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Yehuda, who publicly sanctified God's name, and that's a reference to the event that took place at the crossing of the Yamsuf in the time of Moshe Rabbeinu. So his name, and if you look in the commentary of the Yavetz, you see that names can be, let's say, given almost prophetically, that his name, the name Yehuda, has in it, if you look at it, besides the Dalet, if you were to, let's say, take the Dalet out of his name, the name is actually the four-letter name of Hashem. The Pasuk itself says when he was named, it was a name that Leah called the son out of a sense of thanks, of praise and thanks, of recognition of something special done. That's called Todah, or Hodoya. And if that's the only basis for his name, then it should have been really Yuda, Yud Vav Dalet Hey. Yet he's called Yehuda, and that has to do with this element, this additional element of his name being, we'll say, almost given to him prophetically, because in the future, at the time of the Exodus from Mitzrayim, he and his tribe sanctified God's name in public. So the name Yehuda has within it God's name. Yosef Maihi. What is the reference to Yosef and his sanctification of God's name? Dichtiv. The Pasuk says, Vayi kayom hazeh, vayovoi habayso lasois melachto. This Pasuk is in the context of the story in Sefer Bereishis, where Yosef was a worker in the house of Potiphar. He was the executive director, the apotropos in his house, and the wife of Potiphar had set her eyes upon Yosef. Here you have a married woman, and she had set her eyes upon Yosef, and when you study the Chumash, the Psukim, and Ma'amore Chazal, you see that she was actually quite persistent in trying to get hold of Yosef and to have an intimate experience with him. So here we have a pasuk that says, "Vayhi kahayom hazeh," and it was that day, "Vayovo habaisa," and he came to the house, to Potiphar's house, "Lasois melachto." Omer Rabbi Yochanan, "Melamed sheshneim lidvar avera niskavnu." Rabbi Yochanan says that this is a kind of euphemism. "Lasois melachto" means that not only she, but he too had, at this point, had, we'll call it, incestuous thoughts. That's Devar Avera, means a forbidden act of intimacy. They both niskavnu, they both had intention for that. He and she. Vayovo habayso lasos melachtoi, Rav Ushmul Chad Omar lasos melachtoi mamish. One opinion doesn't explain like Rabbi Yochanan just said, but rather he came to the house to do his daily work. V'chad Omar, the other opinion is, lasos srochov nichnos. He went there for intimacy. On that particular day, he went there for intimacy. How you can come to that conclusion is already a discussion that you find in the commentaries. Tosfos has an explanation, and you'll find other commentaries dealing with that. Let's continue, though, in the Gemara. V'ein ish me'anshe habayis v'chulei. On that particular day, it says there was no one in the household. So how can that be? Efshir bayis godol kebesa shel oisu rosha lo hoya bo ish. Could it be that a large house? You have to imagine this Potiphar was a major official in Paro's government, and he probably had a mansion with many, many servants in it, and here the Pasuk describes no one was home. How could that be? The Gemara describes him the house of that wicked man. Potiphar was no tzaddik, so he was a wicked man, large house, mansion full of servants and what have you, and the Pasuk says no one was home. How could that be? Tana debe Rabbi Shmuel Oisayom Yom Chadlam Hoya. That day, it just so happens to be, was a idolatrous holiday. V'holchu kulin l'beis avedus l'chavim shalhem, and they all went to their temple of worship. V'hi omra lahen, the wife of Potiphar, of course a scheming woman, she said to them, Choylahi, she's ill, and Omra ein li, and chola meaning she was ill, and she said to herself. Omra means she said to herself, ein li yoim sheniskak li Yosef kiyom hazeh. There's no more opportune day to have Yosef have intimacy with me than this day. No one's home. No one will see. No one will hear. Vatispeseu bevigdoi lemar shichva imi. she grabbed him, Yosef, by his garment and insisted, "I want you to lie with me." At that moment, the image of his father, of Yaakov Avinu, appeared to him through the window. Omar lo, the image of his father, the image of Yaakov, said to him, to Yosef, said, "Yosef, asidim achecha shi kosvu al avne ephod." In the future, when the Mishkan is set up and the Kohen Gadol clothing are prepared, the names of your brothers are going to be written on the stones, the shoulder stones of the high priest. Viato beinam, and you're destined to be amongst them. Ratzoncha shimocha shimcha mi beinam, v'sikorei roya zaynais. If you're going to engage in an incestuous act of intimacy, so you're not going to be deserving to be on those stones. So your name will be removed, will not be on those stones, and you will be called the Shepherd of Harlots. Dichtiv, roya v'roya zoynois ya'abed hoin. The Shepherd of Harlots loses out a great deal. Rashi comments very importantly. Ya'abed means losing out a great amount. Where's the great loss by the name not being on the stones? So Rashi says very briefly, Ya'abed hon shem tov shehu yokor mikol hon. A good name is more valuable than all wealth. And in fact, there is a pasuk that says tov shem mishemen tov, which roughly translated would mean a good name is worth more than oil, which is associated with something of great value. Well, you have the scene. She is with the wife of Potiphar has grabbed Yosef, and certainly according to the opinion that said that Yosef also intended to have intimacy on that particular occasion. It looks like it's almost the 11th hour here, and what's going to be? And all of a sudden, the image of Yaakov appears in the window. And what's interesting to note, it's not just the mere appearance of the image that ends up deterring Yosef from going all the way, but it's what the image says to Yosef that has the desired effect. That you're going to end up losing out, and you're going to be called the shepherd of harlots. Miyad, immediately, and we continue in the psukim psukim from Sefer Bereishis. It's not a pasuk in the context of the act, but it's a pasuk that describes Yosef in Bereishis Perik Memtes pasuk Chof Dalid. It says Vateshiv be'esen kashtoi. We have on the side the entire pasuk that's quoted. It's from the blessings that Yaakov gave his children, including Yosef. It says, "Vateshev." We're reading the pasuk from the side of our marked Gemaras. It says there, "Vateshev beis and kashto ve'afozu zroya yodav midei abir Yaakov misham roya even Yisrael." This pasuk will be darshened as we go on in the Gemara. So as soon as the image of Yaakov said what it did, the pasuk in Bereishis describes Vateshev beis and kashto. This pasuk is related to Yosef. Amar Rabbi Yochanan mishum Rabbi Meir sheshava kashtoi li'esonai. That's a reference to a male. When he's going to commit an act of intimacy, so the male organ has a certain, let's say, a state. It's ready for, we'll say, for penetration. But vateshiv be'esen kashto means that state ceased to be, making it impractical or impossible for the act to take place. So that what when it was originally kashto means hardened, so it became softened, and therefore penetration impossible. The pasuk says in the continuation of the pasuk, it says vayafoizu zroye yodav. That's why we read the pasuk before, so you can see it's in its entirety. Here, what does that mean, Vayofozu Zroye Yodov? It means as follows. Noatz Yodov Bekarka, V'yotso Shichvas Zaroi Mibein Tziporne Yodov. Let's look at Rashi. Rashi has a different girsa, one word difference, but it's quite significant. Our Gemara had the word yodov. Rashi says shenotz etzpois of bekarka. He wedged his fingers into the ground. V'nismach alehen. And can you just imagine having your supporting your body weight on your fingers? If you're familiar with an exercise we refer to as push-ups. He did he positioned himself in a push-up fashion, but supporting himself not on the palms of his hands, but rather on his fingers. And that could create a great amount of pain. And as Rashi says, the nismachaleim, he was resting upon his fingers. Kedei, or resting means supporting himself on his fingertips. Kedei sheyisyaser, creating a great amount of, we'll say, of strain, of pain. V'yitrad b'tzaro, v'yavor tokef yitzro. And with that, let's say, physical exertion, physical pain, so the desire for intimacy would be overcome by this new strenuous experience. And the Gemara itself describes that his having done this then resulted, and this might be a figure of speech, or maybe miraculously, the male seed then came forth from between his fingernails. For our purposes, though, even if you take this on a non, let's say, miraculous level, you can just imagine here he was at the 11th hour, almost involved with an act of intimacy, and we saw one opinion before he actually wanted to do that. So all of the passion had been aroused, and at this last moment, he was deterred from the appearance of his father's image and what it said to him. So in order to overcome the great passion that had possessed him, he did what we just saw, Vayofozu Zroye Yodov, Noatz Yodov Bekarka, as we just read in the Gemara. Now, the pasuk goes on to say, Midei Abir Yaakov, Mi Goram Lo Sheyachokek Al Avnei Ephod. What caused his name to be etched out on the high priest's shoulder stones? Elo Abir Yaakov. So, the Abir is the strength of Yaakov, of his father. And the pasuk goes on to say, Misham Roe Even Yisrael, Misham Zacha, from there he merited Vinase Roe. He became a Roe. And Roe is a literally a shepherd, but he was also a leader. He actually, there's a double merit there. He became Roe, and he also merited having his name on the stone. And the pasuk said, even though the Gemara doesn't emphasize that in this line, but the pasuk said Misham Roe Even Yisrael, so it was a Roe and also Even meaning the stone, both relating to Yisrael, the names of the Jewish people on the stones, and he a Roe of Yisrael. Shenemar, the pasuk says Roe Yisrael Hazina Noheg Katzon Yosef. And Without getting involved with the pirush of the pasuk, the explanation of this pasuk, but nevertheless, you see the Jewish people described as like the flock of Yosef. Hence, Yosef was the shepherd of the Jewish people. Certainly, after the family descended to Egypt, and as the pasuk explains quite clearly, Yosef supported his entire family and was responsible for the Jews achieving a significant social, cultural position in that at that time in Egypt. Tanya, Hoya Roy Yosef Lotzeis Mimenu Yud Beis Shvatim Kederef Shiyotsu Miyankiv Oviv. Yosef, according to the original blueprints, was deserving, was fit to have 12 tribes come forth from him as came forth from his father, from Yaakov. Shenemar, the pasuk says, Eile toldos Yankiv Yosef. You see a juxtaposition here. Those who came forth from Yankiv, and the same would be to have come forth from Yosef. However, Elo Shiyotza Shichva Zaru Mibein Siporne Yodov. But you know it didn't happen. Yosef had only two sons that are at least recorded in the Chumash, and 10 he didn't have. He had two, not 12. So 10 were missing. How do you account for those 10 missing ones? That's the Shichva Zera that we saw before, the semen, the male seed that came forth between his fingers, and there are 10 fingers. So that accounts for that was his seed. His seed got spilled out or wasted, hence his loss of having actually 12 tribes. V'afa pikein yotsu mi Binyamin achiv. Nevertheless, that missing 10 did come forth from his brother, from Binyamin, his brother. So we have 10 from Binyamin, 2 from Yosef, Ephraim and Manasseh. So here we are able to account for 12. The Kula Nikru al Shmoi, all 10 sons of Binyamin were named having in mind or in honor of some aspect of Yosef. Yosef was Binyamin's older brother. Shenemar, the Pasuk says, Uvnei Binyamin Bela Vovecher V'Ashbel. Now, the Pasuk here just says V'chulei, etc., but if you look on in our Mark Gemaras, you can see we've underlined the names, and you can see 10 underlinings, 10 sons of Binyamin. And here we explain the connection between the sons' names and Yosef. Bela, this was the first of Binyamin's sons, Shenivla Bein Ha'umos. Yosef was absorbed. He was sold by his brothers to a foreign land, so he was absorbed into the nations of the world. Ubecher Bechor Limo Hoyo. Becher, from you could see, has the same root as the word Bechor. He was the firstborn to his mother. Rochel had two sons, and the first one was Yosef. Ve'ashbel Sheshavoi Kel. He was taken captive through a divine plan. And Gera Shegor Bachsonoyos. He lived in inns. He was cast from place to place in a strange land. The Naamon Shinoim Biyoser. Naamon, the fifth son of Binyamin, a reflection on Yosef. He was very pleasant. Efi Vorosh. These are names of Binyamin's sons. Ochi Hu. Veroshi Hu. He's my brother and he's my head. He's above me. He's older than me. Mupim Vichupim. These are sons 8 and 9 of Binyamin. Hu lo ro bechupasi, vani lo roisi bechupaso. The son called Chupim, you can see how that's related to Chupah, a marriage canopy. And hence, Binyamin is saying he didn't see my getting married and I didn't see his marriage. As far as the name Mupim is concerned, Rashi comments, Mupim, across you can see Rashi says, Mefurosh Bemedrash Rabbi Tanchuma Shoya Piv. The word Mupim, you can see the word Pi or Pe in the midst of that word. Shoya Piv, the mouth of Yosef, Kefi Yankiv Ovinu, Behalochas Shikibo Mishem Ve'ever. He had learned the teachings from the ancient yeshiva of Shem and Aver, places that are alluded to from time to time in the Gemara, where Yankiv Ovinu had learned from them, and Yosef as well had absorbed, most likely through Yankiv, had absorbed those teachings. So Mupim is a reference to the teachings of Shem Ve'ever and Chupim, as we see in the Gemara. Vo'ard Sheyorad Lebein Umos Olam, that he descended to be amongst the nations of the world. Ikar Diamri, another version, Vo'ard Sheponov Domin Leveret. His face had a beautiful complexion like that of a veret. A veret is the name of a flower. Many translate that as a rose, a very beautiful looking plant. And so, too, Yosef was very beautiful looking. Omer b'fiyah bar Abba, Omer b'yochanan, b'shol sh'omer lo paro li'yosef. When Paro empowered Yosef and he said, uv'ladecha lo yorim ish es yodo, after Yosef provided sound counsel to Paro and the interpretation of his dreams, so Paro empowered him to become the viceroy of Egypt. Omru itztagnine Paro, the ministers, itztagnine, sometimes it's translated the stargazers, but now for our purposes it's a reference to the ministers of Pharaoh's court, said to Paro, Efet shelokho rabo b'esrim kesef tamshileu aleinu, a slave that was purchased by his master for 20 pieces of silver should be appointed above us? Omar Lohen, Paro said, Ginune Malchus Ani Roebo. I see in him the colors, the hues of royalty, of monarchy. Rashi says, Ginune Malchus Givone Malchus Bechochma Gvurav Yofi. He has the attributes of a king. He has wisdom, he has bravery, and he has beauty. So don't refer to him just as some kind of cheap slave. Omru lo. So the minister said to Paro, if he actually represents royalty, im ken ye yodea b'shivim loshon, so then he must know 70 languages. If I might just make a side comment here, the assumption that they automatically make that is that monarchy, a king, a leader, would know 70 languages. If you were to translate this into contemporary terms, do you know people that know 70 languages? The world record holder for language proficiency, if it reaches even 20, would be quite an accomplishment. Here, a reference as a matter of fact, kings, royalty, being familiar with 70 languages, that should put into perspective, for our purposes, a little sense of, we'll say, of humility, that when referring to the ancients, they were not necessarily, as some might perceive, some type of backward, prehistoric type cavemen. The ancients had levels of wisdom that we could only dream of ever achieving. And you'll ask, what's the point of making this editorial comment in the middle of our Daf Yomi Shir? The reason for making this comment is for us to appreciate all the more the ability of the Jewish people to contend with the powers of yore, the ancient powers, the nation states that you read about, that you learn when you study the Tanakh, and of course study the Chazal, one should have a certain, we'll say, level of respect and awe of those ancient states, for the simple purpose of elevating the respect that you should have for the ability of the nation of Israel to withstand them, at times defeat them, and of course, and here's the main point, it was always and continues to be with the involvement of the Almighty. And here you have nation states whose rulers knew 70 languages, and that you can just imagine how advanced they were technologically and militarily and what have you. How in the world could the Jewish people possibly contend with forces like that? So, and once again we repeat the main point, it's only because the Almighty is in constant watch of his special people, the Jewish people, and it's only because of that that we ever have a chance, till, of course, this very day. The Gemara goes on with the claim of the ministers, saying that if he's really, as you, Paro, think, a figure of royalty, then of course he knows 70 languages. I think it's pretty obvious that Yosef, coming from the house of Yankiv Avinu, didn't invest efforts in studying all the languages of the world. So in order for him to be able to meet this standard, you would need some kind of miraculous intervention. Bor Gavriel v'lindoy shivim loshon lo havekogomar. The angel Gavriel came. We made reference to this angel, by the way, a number of dapim ago, in the context of do angels know other languages, and certainly the Gemara focused on Aramaic, where we were told do not daven in Aramaic, and the Gemara raised the question, but there was a bas kol that did know Aramaic. How can you claim that angels don't know Aramaic? And one of the explanations given in that previous Gemara was that Gavriel came, and Gavriel was the one that was heard in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and he was different than the standard angel that in fact doesn't know Aramaic, and Gavriel being different. And here you see an illustration of that, of his power to instruct concerning all 70 languages of the world. But he, even though an angel with supernatural powers, was ineffective in teaching Yosef. That's lo havekogomar. He didn't absorb it. He wasn't able to learn it. Hoysif lo ois achas mishmoy shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And then he added, it seems like the angel Gabriel added one letter from the name of the Almighty, and added that letter to Yosef's name, and with that he then absorbed the lomad. Shenemar edus b'yahoysef somay b'tzeisel haaretz Mitzrayim. And the pasuk actually goes on to say, even though it's in parentheses here, Sfasli adati eshma, which indicates he suffers a language. He previously did not know the languages, and with the addition of the name, he was able to absorb all the languages. Ulamachar, the next day, Kolishna Dishtoi Paro Bahade, Ahadirle, any language that Paro spoke to Yosef, Yosef answered him in that very tongue. Ishtoi Ihu Veloshana Kedish, then Yosef spoke to Paro in the holy tongue, in what we call Hebrew, Lo Have Koyoda Mai Have Omar. Paro, when it came to that language, he didn't know what was being said. Omar Le Agmiri, so Paro said, I want you to teach me that language. Agmire Velo Gomar. Yosef attempted to teach him Loshana Kedish, but Paro did not absorb it. And Paro, maybe the world's most powerful emperor, is now in a rather, embarrassing situation. Omar Le, Paro said, Ishtaba Li Delo Maglis. I want you to swear unto me that you will not reveal that I don't know this language. Ishtaba Lo, and Yosef cooperated and swore, I won't reveal this. Ki Omar Le, later, when Yosef, after his father Yankiv died, and Yankiv had requested and bound Yosef by oath to have his, Yankiv's, remains buried in Eretz Canaan, Yosef says to Paro, Avi Hishbiani Lemor, my father bound me by oath to have him buried in Eretz Canaan. That entails my leaving Egypt for the time being, and seeing to his burial. Well, Paro wasn't so happy with his successful viceroy leaving Egypt. It seems even temporarily. Omar Le Zil Itchil Ashwasach. Paro says, well, why not go and have your oath rescinded? There's a concept that we've learned in previous Masechtas, especially Maseches Nedarim, where vows can be undone, they can be rescinded, they can be voided by seeking out the, we'll say, the instruction, the direction of a sage. We call that a Sheilas Chocham. So Itshil, from word Sheila, go ask for your vow to be rescinded. Omar Leh, so Yosef said, oh, you want my vow to be rescinded? The Itshili Nami Adidoch, should I also have the vow that you imposed on me rescinded as well? And that would, of course, result in the revelation of Paro's ignorance of Loshon HaKodesh. The Afagav de Loni Chole, even though it wasn't pleasing to Paro to have Yosef keep his vow and bury Yankiv in Eretz Canaan, Amalei Alo Ukvor Esovicha Kasher Ishbiacha, go and bury your father as he bound you by oath. So up till now, we've been focusing on what we had as our heading, marking-wise, a diamond Roman numeral number one, where we learned and discovered what was meant by Yosef sanctifying God's name in private. The sanctification of God's name had to do with his overcoming the desire for a forbidden act of intimacy, and thereby that representing, let's say, choosing godliness over, let's say, bestial passion. And that is called Kiddush Shem Shamayim. And as we noted in the story, it was all in a, we'll say, in a private context. It wasn't necessary at the time. It wasn't something that gained any public knowledge. If anything, when you look at the story in the Chumash, you see that he was then thrown into jail under false charges that the wife of Potiphar had cast upon him. At this point in the Gemara, you can see we have another diamond, Roman numeral number two, whereby we're going to discover the statement made that Yehuda was Mekadesh Shem Shamayim B'Farhesya. His sanctification of God's name, which involves overcoming this concept of Kiddush Hashem, has to do with overcoming, say, basically human instincts or human desires and passions for this, for something of a higher godly nature. On the side of our Gemara, we have an osay, a topic heading, Machloikis Tanoya Mihoyo Horishon Nikones Lesor Hamayim Bekriyas Yamsuf. Who was the first to enter the water that resulted in the splitting of the sea at the time of Kriyas Yamsuf, the exodus from Mitzrayim, and the famous incident of the splitting of the Yamsuf? Yehuda Mahi. And we want to know what's Yehuda's sanctification in public of God's name. Tesanya, Hoya Rabbi Meir Omer, Kishomdi Yisrael Alayam, Hoyu Shvotim Minatzchim Ze Im Ze. When the Jewish people were standing by the shore of the Yam, the tribes were Minatzchim. They were striving. They were fighting, so to speak, with one another. Ze Omer Ani Yorei Tchil Alayam. Ze Omer Ani Yorei Tchil Alayam. According to Rav Meir's approach, everyone wanted to be the first to go into the sea. And with the descent into the sea, that would result in its splitting. So according to Rabbi Meir's approach, which you'll see later, the second opinion in this source, Rabbi Yehuda, says it was nothing like this. But nevertheless, in the meantime, Rabbi Meir says each one was striving to be the first one. Kofatz, we continue at the top of Lamed Zayin Amud Aleph. Shifto shel Binyamin v'yorad liyam tchila. The tribe of Binyamin was the one to jump in first. Shenemar, the pasuk says, Shom Binyamin soir rodeim. Al tikri rodeim. Don't read this pasuk as rodeim. Elo raid yam, descending into the sea. V'hoyu sore Yehuda roigmim oisam. And the ministers, the leaders of the tribe of Yehuda, were pelting stones at them. Shenemar, the pasuk continues to say, Sarei Yehuda Rigmasam. You can see we've highlighted with a double underline and a house marking the expression Lefikach Zocha, and you have in the house marking here Binyamin, later you have the name Yehuda. So with Rabbi Meir's approach in mind, with Binyamin's success in being the first into the sea, Lefikach Zocha Binyamin Hatzadik V'Nase Ushpizchon Levura. He merited many years later, when the Beis HaMikdash was set up in the land of Israel, to be the one to host the Gvura, the strength, meaning the Almighty. That is a reference to the building of the Beis HaMikdash, particularly the Holy of Holies, in the section that of Israel that was ascribed to the tribe of Binyamin. The word Ushpizchon means he became the host of the Almighty's divine presence in this world. Shenemar, the Pasuk says, in the context of Binyamin, it says, Uvein Ksefav Shochein. And literally it means, and between his shoulders, his meaning Binyamin's shoulders, he, the Almighty, will dwell. But it means, as we said, in the portion of Binyamin, that is where the Beis HaMikdash was going to be erected. Omar lo, Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda responds to Rabbi Meir and says, "Lo kach hoya maisa." That is not what took place. Ela zelmer ein ani yorei tchila liyam, vezelmer ein ani yorei tchila liyam. As far as the nation of Israel is concerned, each one was saying, "I'm not going first, and I'm not going first." Kofatz Nachshon ben Aminodov. He was the leader of Shevet Yehuda. He jumped in first. Yorad liam tchila shenemar. The pasuk says, "Sivavuni bechachash Ephraim uvemirma beis Yisrael Yehuda od rom im keil." And we glance at the Rashi on the second line from the top. Rod. Im Kael Yorad Biyam Al Shebotach BaKodesh Baruch Hu. Now that's very central over here, that we're describing the act of Nachshon ben Aminadav, who was the head of the tribe of Yehuda. He was reliant and totally trustworthy in the Kodesh Baruch Hu, and that he did not fear jumping into a sea. The Allah, the Gemara continues, the Allah Meforish B'Kabbalah, and it's explained concerning him in the scriptures, Hoshieni Elakim Kibo Mayim Adnofesh Tavati Bivein Mitsula Vein Ma'amod V'chulei. And it goes on in that parak of Tehillim to say, Al Tefeni Shiboilis Mayim Al Tivloeni Mitsula. These psukim, without translating them word for word, but you can see there's a plead to the Almighty, save me, the waters are coming to drown me in its depths, don't allow me to be swept away and absorbed in its depths. And those psukim are being ascribed to Nachshon ben Aminadav. At that point, Moshe was praying, my beloved ones are drowning in the waters, and you're praying a lengthy prayer to me. Omar lefonov. So Moshe said, "Ribon Shalom, uma biyodi lasos." I see that's a very desperate situation, but what is in my power? What can I do? Omar lo, daber el bnei Yisrael v'yisu v'ato horeim es matcha unete es yodcha v'chulei. You tell the Jewish people, go into the sea, and you raise your staff, and that will result in their salvation, of course, in the sea splitting. Lefikach zocha Yehuda le'asos memshala b'Israel. As a result of this act of courage on the part of Nachshon ben Aminadav, who represented the tribe of Yehuda, Yehuda merited being the tribe from which rulership emanates. Shenemar, Hoiso Yehuda Likotshoi, Yisrael Mam Shaloisov. The Pasuk goes on to say, Hayom Ro Vayonos. Now, in the Pasuk that is probably familiar to many of you from the Hallel, it says that Yehuda was the Hois Yehuda Likotshoi, Yisrael Mam Shaloisov. That means that Yisrael were Yehuda's subjects. Matam Hoiso Yehuda Likotshoi, Yisrael Mam Shaloisov. Why was Yehuda considered the sanctified one and the nation of Israel his subjects? Mishum, because of what it continues to say in the Pasuk, Dayom Ro'o Vayonos. The sea saw, it perceived, and it ran away. And that's a reference to the splitting, the waters parted, moving away, and thereby enabling the Jewish people to cross. And all of this is a result of Nachshon ben Aminadav, according to Rebuta, and his initiative. And this is what we were referring to earlier about Yehuda sanctifying the name of Hashem in Befarhesia, in public. You couldn't have anything more public than that which we just described. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.